You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 112 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/outlanderpod. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
I think it's also available on the Windows phone.
Oh, it just may be.
So announcements this week. You heard right, we have announcements. Looks like we got some new photos from the Outlander Instagram account. And by new photos, I mean new photo.
There was another one, but it was behind the scenes from old stuff, and that's not news, so I didn't include it. But this one did not say on Instagram, if you go, it did not say #BTS. This is what it said. Highlanders need love too. So I'm guessing it's from season one because they're all dirty in Scotland, but we don't know, and they didn't say.
I mean, they could be dirty and in Scotland right now.
There's a lot of dirty Scotland coming up in season two.
That's my point. As dirty as season one was in Scotland, I'm fairly sure that season two in Scotland is way dirtier.
A little dirtier. So, while it's not quite an announcement, we did have some fun this weekend.
I mean, it's a timely announcement of things we did.
We attended the 150th annual Scottish Highland Games and Gathering in Pleasanton, California.
And but it was confusing because it's in Pleasanton, California, but it's held at the Alameda County Fairgrounds.
Pleasanton is in Alameda County.
It might be, but it made it real hard to find it because I was like, Pleasanton Games, where are you located? And then I made Ginger look it up in the GPS, and she said, it's the Alameda County Fairgrounds. And I was like, oh, are we going to Pleasanton? It was very confusing for me. I was feeling very blonde.
So last year when we went, it was the two of us and Lene, and we did the Whiskey Live, which was lots of fun. And this year, it was Summer and I and a little one. Who is that little one?
Wendy?
Is that what we're calling you today?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this year, unfortunately, Lene could not join us, so I thought the most appropriate substitute for Lene would be my daughter, which, can I say, made for a completely different day at the Pleasanton Games. And she wanted to be on the podcast with us today, but apparently now she's gotten shy and doesn't want to talk. But you may hear her giggle from time to time.
Did you want to say hi?
Hi.
Did you have a good time at the games?
Yes.
What did you do?
Did you see any doggies or horses or kilts?
A bunch of kilts.
You saw kilts, yeah.
She said kilts every time she saw one. She kept pointing them and we're like, this is going to be a long day. And maybe next year we'll do more fun stuff and you can come back and talk about it again. What do you say? Say thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I was looking forward to seeing the tent by the Northern California Outlander fan club that they put together. I was looking forward to it.
Dude.
Hold on. I was looking forward to it. And I'm very thankful that our friends Kate and Marifel, and also Whiskey and Tartan, and who else am I missing? Collie Travis from her Skinsation soaps. I hope I'm not leaving anybody out. So many people whom we reached out to were able to send some of their stuff to be shown there also at the booth. And so I knew it was going to have stuff to show, Outlander-related stuff. No one told us they were going to have stone.
A big stone. It was big.
I mean, like, probably like 7 feet tall.
It had to have been almost to scale.
Oh, my goodness.
Real close to scale. Maybe even bigger than scale.
I doubt bigger than scale, but it was awfully big. It was gorgeous, and they had texture on it. They had the color. It wasn't just a flat gray. It was done really well. And then, of course, on the bottom, there's like little stones around it, and they had like...
There was like moss and like lichen.
Like moss and nice little things. I'm like, oh, that's sweet. Look at the little flowers. And like I did a double take. I was like, you're kidding me. They put forget-me-nots at the base of the stones. I thought, there's no, oh my gosh. So
what can I say? They're avid readers. They know the books. They know the
show. Oh my goodness, they know the books.
But what I had more fun with almost than that, I mean, and it's because of the things that they brought to their booth, was watching. The different times that I got to be at that booth, because I was all over the place following my daughter around. But the times when I was able to be still and at the booth was watching everyone come up to this booth and take pictures with Jamie and take pictures with the stones, and just how much interacting they did and how much people loved that booth.
Seriously. We were around a few other tents and saw, you know, went around the clan, some of the clan tents and some of the vendors, and everything is neat. Everything that you see is neat, and you want to take so much home with you. I get it. Not only was it neat, it was fascinating, and I'm not going to lie, I had a little pride that it was our Northern California booth representing, and I'm sure there are a lot of other things that other groups out there do, but I don't go to games and see other booths. I've only seen this one, and oh my goodness, all I can say is watch out 2016, because I hope to be able to spend a little more time actually at the booth, because you're right. I enjoyed it, and because of the booth, we were already going to do, because of what we knew would be there. We'd heard about the Jamies, we'd heard about other things, but I didn't know about the stone. And so when I saw it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know how in the heck we're going to do this periscope, because this, I want to like stay in front of this stone for like 5 minutes. I was hoping the periscope would be, you know, 5 or 6 minutes.
Mm-mm. Your QVC periscope?
My QVC periscope. I thought it was like 10 or 11. When I looked at the replay later on, it was 14. It was good.
But for real, if you want to send that tape into QVC, they will probably hire you.
Oh no, I'm not moving to Atlanta.
There might be a local place. No. You don't know.
I mean, yeah. No,
it'd be like a satellite.
No, because that's all camera. I don't necessarily want to be on camera. That was fun. I mean, I did flip it around to say hello. And now I know, after the fact.
You can just tap the front. Yeah.
Yeah. No one told me.
I almost did that to you when you were periscoping one time, just to see if you would freak out that all of a sudden the camera was on you and you couldn't turn it off. Because I was standing behind you at one point and you were doing it. And I almost reached in and double tapped the screen. So it was all of a sudden your face.
Oh my gosh. I think I would have screamed live for everyone to see.
I declined to do it, but I may do it next time.
I'm so glad you kept that in check and you controlled yourself.
I do have sometimes where I'm able to control it again.
Like once a year, and that was it.
You're lucky it landed on a good day.
I was very lucky. It was about the periscope on that day. So the periscope happened. It was a little bit longer than we planned, and I was bursting through it because I was obviously excited about what I was talking about. Everything, my joy, my excitement was legit. I was... oh my gosh, and then this, and like all those recipes of Teresa's at Outlander Kitchen. I think I had remembered that they had told me something about that, but I mean, that was, what a booth. That was so neat, and we've talked with them and the organizers, and they put so much time into that. And that quilt, I almost said that kilt, that quilt.
Okay, I've only seen the quilt in the pictures that I've seen online. I didn't actually get to see it in person.
You didn't watch the periscope then?
Not all of it. I told you I didn't watch the whole periscope. I was watching part of it, and then I had to focus in on what was going on. I was on the periscope long enough to like make a couple snide comments, and then I had to check out. So,
but toward the end, and I knew it would be last because I knew I'd get caught on it because there's so much. Every single square, like, you know, obviously four sides, the sides of each square has someone's name or a quote from the book. Every single, I was like, you're kidding me. So I did a little bit with Periscope, but I didn't do the whole thing. And then... running up the entire side, the border, is the Skyboat song.
Nice.
What the heck? And I was like, sing me. What's the line after sing me a song? Of a last that is gone? So I think it started with at least the part that I caught. It's again, it's sideways. You can't turn your periscope thing sideways because your camera just turns. But it's, I think I started with last that is gone, say, could that last be? I think, I don't know, whatever. But it was obviously very slow, no vibrato. I was trying to, quote unquote, sing as I took the camera up the side, but didn't last. It was just up one side. But so it was a great games. It was a great booth. Music, as always, was good. Food, was as always, was way too much.
Seriously, one of these times, I need to go to the games by myself. Like, legit, by myself. Because every time I go with either friends or with my daughter, I don't get to do anything I want to do. Anything. Like, there was a couple of times I wanted to sit down and listen to some music that was playing. But when I went with my friends, they were like, oh, I want to go over here. Or when I was with my daughter, she's wandering off. So it was like, I never got to just sit anywhere and be a part of what was going on. So next time.
One time.
Next time.
Certainly one time.
Next
time. Maybe next
time. So next time I say we share a booth with somebody and then you can watch it and I'm going to go watch music live.
So we had a great time at the games. And
what did you eat at the games?
What did I eat? Oh my gosh. Oh.
Because they have all those
veggie
food trucks.
Curry pie.
Curried veggie, curried veg pie?
Yes.
Yeah, and just to preface, it was like 10 o'clock when we were kind of wandering around, and that was probably close to 10:30. But at 10:30, there was no lines for any of the booths, the food vendors. And I was starting to get a little hungry, but I was like, it's only 10 o'clock. I don't want to eat right now, because then I'm going to be like starving at 2. So I was like, well, just let's go do this other stuff. We'll walk around. And we walked around for like an hour, and at 11:30, I was like, we can totally eat now. And as we walked back over to the vendors, all of the food vendors had like a mile and a half long lines. So in that like half an hour, 45-minute period of time, I missed my window. So and I was going to go to one of the vendors that had meat pies because I really wanted to get a meat pie. But their line was so long, but there's a little tinier vendor in between them, like the pie shop or whatever it was called, that also had meat pies. So I got one there. It's pretty good.
And they had
the curried vegetable.
Curried
one.
Veg. I've never seen at any games. There's vegetarian stuff you can make work, but I've never seen at any games a vegetarian pie on purpose. I've never seen it. And the funny thing was, it was this small booth that had it. It wasn't the vendor. It wasn't the one that
the
everyone
heritage
was going
one.
To. Yeah, which is, I think we've seen everywhere. We've seen
that. They're at every game, but for whatever reason, at this game on that particular day, everyone got hungry at like 11:15. And started lining up like it was nuts.
But we had a great time, a fun first Periscope. Wonderful, wonderful showing by the Northern Outlander fan community at that booth. And like you said, it was so much fun. It was fun to do the Periscope, I'm not going to lie. But it was so much fun to watch people come up and interact with the stuff and the stone and...
Oh, and everyone knew exactly who those cutouts were. It wasn't like anyone walked up...
Oh, because Jamie?
Yeah. It wasn't like anyone walked up and was like, why is there some like random cutout? Everyone walked up like they had just found their Messiah.
Absolutely.
They were like, Jamie, on! And
my gosh.
Everyone was taking pictures with them.
If you guys just look around, I mean, I don't even have to necessarily watch a hashtag because we do already follow certain people, but on Twitter, on Facebook... On Instagram, I'm seeing all of these pictures with one of NorCal Jamie and with the NorCal Stone. It's so neat. And if you, they're posting with the location, Pleasanton, California, or Pleasanton Scottish Games, Pleasanton, California, something like that. But it was so nice just to see a little bit of Northern California represented. So that was kind of cool.
And they also said that next year's booth, they're going to find a way to make the stones actually travel through time. So next year, come to the booth.
And you'll be able to have gone to 2015's booth.
Right, but you'll be going to 2015's, but not 2015's booth.
Hey, it was a good year.
That's a terrible thing to try to push on. I was going to say it was going to take him back to like 1740, whatever.
That's
unfortunately,
dangerous.
It would be in Pleasanton, California still. So it might not take you exactly
we
where you
We had some missions around by then, I think. I'm not sure all of them were here, but I don't think Pleasanton had a mission.
Maybe not a mission. No, it'd be some Indians.
Some Native
Americans. Oh, I'm fired.
So, yeah, they promised to do, I guess, apparently more work for next year. And that kind of wraps up our time at the games. That was a lot of fun. We also had the opportunity to sit down with performer Davey Simmons and discuss a little bit about his background and his work, and especially his piece called Culloden Field.
So this is Ginger here with the Outlander podcast here at the 150th annual Pleasanton Scottish Highland Games and Gathering in Pleasanton, California. And we are speaking with Davey Simmons, musician, singer, and all-around entertainer, performer. So we'd like to say hello, Davey.
Hi.
And thank you for meeting with us today.
Well, it's a great day here in Pleasanton.
And joining us also is Tom Simpson of Clan Fraser, and you are the NorCal convener, correct?
Yes, indeed. I was the chief of the Central California Scottish Society.
And he is here in his beautiful Fraser Berry Red shirt, Fraser of Lovett, which we know and fans of the Outlander series, much more so the books than the show, because the show hasn't really gotten that far yet. It's only been book one, but fans of the series will know that the old fox, Simon the old fox, the Fraser of Lovett, very important to the storyline, and we'll get a lot more of that in book two, Dragonfly and Apple.
Whoa, we got a train going by here.
A lot more of that in book two, Dragonfly and Amber. So, Davey, can you tell us a little bit about your music? How did you get to be where you are?
Well, it all starts back in high school, naturally, with a rock band. I just recently did a rock and roll album, but the real true love that's connected to Outlander began in Boulder in 1994, where I met people that were interested in the fact that I could sing like a Scotsman. I didn't know how I could, but I did love it. And I was wearing Fraser tartan even there in the late 80s. I was involved with pipe bands. I was involved with playing the drums. I was involved with many things, but I had never thought about singing Scottish tunes, but I wanted to write original material. And when I read Diana Gabaldon's book, Outlander, I was really intrigued, and I did write Jamie in the Tower, which I hope you have on your show sometime. At that time, thinking about Jamie, the character was really fascinating. I must apologize for not reading all the books she had out at that time, but I did read Outlander and never forgot it. Now, from there, I did the albums. I got involved with Highland Games, and naturally, with my friend Tom and his Clan Fraser, I ended up in California. I have a lovely wife named Angel who plays the harp. Naturally, I'm a natural Fraser and a natural-born singer with some Celtic background.
You mentioned Jamie in the Tower. Can you tell us a little bit about your inspiration for wanting to even write that kind of song?
Yeah, Jamie in the Tower is very interesting. We really should talk about Culloden Field, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
And that's track number one.
And, you know, I want to mention Clan Fraser is mentioned in the song, the Fraser's tartan, the colors. It's a very important thing to save your colors at a battle. Now, as you know, it was the last battle on British soil. I sang at Culloden on the 150th anniversary in 1996 at Culloden. And I'll never forget coming up with that line. Well, you know, when Murray's charge at Break the Line and all this was important, Murray's, all these things had happened. But when the Frasers lost their colors, blue silk sunk in marshy ground. I thought that was, it brought back the memories of the battle. Now, Tom here should mention a little thing about what did you feel about the Outlander series?
We've been the fans of Diana's since the Outlander came out. My daughter got me reading it. She said, "Dad, you got to read this." I said, "Do I look like I want to read a bodice ripper?" And I read the first book, and I've been hooked all ever since. I've learned more of our history of Clan Fraser from Diana than I have from reading the histories from the Clan.
Oh, nice.
It's absolutely true. She's done such a strong job of research, because that's what her field was. And she does, she makes it palatable. She makes it so you can understand it. Now, that's a hard thing to do, especially with our Clan, because it gets really complicated. But we've, even long before the series on television, we'd have women come by the tent, and I'd say, oh, are you Frasers? And they'd say, no. And I'd say, oh, you're looking for Jamie? Yeah. So it's been very popular. It's been great for our clan, and it's been good for the Scots, because it's now getting us out so people realize that we're here.
Well, I think Diana appreciates our enthusiasm from this level. Early on, it had a big inspiration on my life, as Tom has indicated here. Running a clan tent is not an easy job. If you look around here, we've got happy people every day, and that's what's important. She has inspired us, and I think that the Highland Games should applaud her in every way possible. I think the series is going to go all the way through all her books, and I pray to God that this happens, because she's a lovely person with a lovely, lovely message to the world about romance and the lovely past that the Scots and Irish come from. We appreciate her a lot. And I guess you could say that if they want to get my music, I coined a phrase called Histscape. Now, it's like, I really think it came from the fact that you go back in time. It's like escape, but it's with H-I-S-T, scape, S-C-A-P-E.com. You can get to all my materials and find out about the work that I do with my music. I can't go without mentioning Canadian Celtic Cowboy, which was a song I wrote for my shows in Edinburgh. I've been to Edinburgh a couple times at the Fringe. Have you been to Edinburgh, Tom?
In Edinburgh, yes, but not during the festival.
Not during the festival, but I'm sure he has. Yeah.
Or how often are you able to get to Scotland? And how much or how many times or when will you be performing in Scotland again?
Well, I'm thinking seriously of doing another show in Scotland. Thanks, Tommy. And if that happens, it could be in the next couple of years. I'm thinking of stand-up comedy as well, because I do comical things that are Scottish. You can't help but thinking about the kilt. You almost become a comedian when you put a kilt on with some people, you know. But the thing is that what I want to do is get back to Scotland. I was there 4 or 5 times in the late 80s as a programmer analyst and working in aerospace, which I did back then before I went from rock and roll back to music again. So I went there in 1994. I was there at the very first festival, the very first organized festival in 1994 in Edinburgh. And I brought the street people in, and we did, it's called the Hippie Fest because the street people came in to the festival in 1994, which was much the chagrin of some of the Scottish or British organizers from London that didn't like this. I have some lovely dats about that time period. Then I went back in 2003, 9 years later, and I did the Canadian Celtic Cowboy, 29 shows at the Carlton. It was known as the CCC, Canadian Celtic Cowboy, at the sea at Carlton, which is another sea. So you could say I'm a 5C person. Oh, yes, it was a lot of fun.
So what are some of your upcoming plans or performance dates?
Well, I may be one of the laziest performers in history. I have yet to put my Culloden Field Braveheart... Braveheart the Musical was at the Toronto Star in the arts section, dubbed the album in 1997. And the promoter I had in Toronto, Canada, got that in the arts section of the Toronto Star. And it really changed my life. I met my wife, Angel, because of it. And she is a harpist, and she was hired to play on the CD, but I didn't meet her for 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, did you do a Celtic album in Vancouver, Canada? I said, yes. And I asked her that most important question, are you married? And I married her in 1998 because of the album. There's a lot of wonderful things that Diana, in her wonderful wisdom and hard work, which we appreciate.
So, again, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
We look forward to sharing this with the Outlander community.
Yeah, www.histscape.com.
Thank you so much. And we will be sharing all of those links and information about the song on our website as well.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
The prince sat on his gray horse and bade the pipes be played. The wind pulled at our drones as Bora, I heard men say, as sleep slid from the battalion drums. As sleep slid from the battalion drums. Then o'er the break came rumbling from mouths of heated steel. Lord Belfort's shot came tumbling, our rebel forces reeled. As rant on rant addressed the drums. As rant on rant addressed the drums. Culloden Field, Sheen Shen Shield, wind blow the shot away, protect him from the fray. Culloden Field, Sheen Shen Shield, but only fog was blown away, and we saw the light of day. Then Austin lost his lady, a strong and healthy mare. As Daniel pleads now to our prince, rein up, I heard him say. As sleep slid from the battalion drums. As sleep slid from the battalion drums. Now Cumberland fought shrewdly, forbade a charge that day. Lord Murray saw red on his flank, close up, I heard men say. As rant on rant addressed the drums. As rant on rant addressed the drums. Culloden Field, Sheen Shen Shield, protect our king you find, impressed in the enemy lines. Culloden Field, Sheen Shen Shield, blood chieftains have their way, so brother doth brother slay. The regiment of barrels withstood the heel and charge. No one took heel from slashing steel, no quarter was given that day. As sleep slid from the battalion drums. As sleep slid from the battalion drums. Now the Frasers lost their colors, blue silk sunk in marshy ground. While Murray's charge did break the line, like wolves they mowed men down. As rant on rant addressed the drums. As rant on rant addressed the drums. Culloden Field, Sheen Shen Shield, rain washed the blood away, the blood that spilled today. Culloden Field, Sheen Shen Shield, when the fox that got away, turn and fight another day. Are empty and grass grows to the knee, and of this prince, this man of myth, we cry out Bonnie Charlie. As even in sleep the curious come, as even in sleep the curious come. Now o'er the sea came rumbling from those that knew Octree, for this nation blessed and long suppressed, they sing out our history. As clan on clan hear their drums. As clan on clan hear their drums. Culloden Field, Sheen Shen Shield, couldn't take what we held dear, our bagpipe, kilt and beer. Culloden Field, Sheen Shen Shield, soul charged by glass and cheer, proud 700 years.
For the listeners of the Outlander podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service.
I think last time we suggested Outlander, which is completely understandable, but I think since we're in the midst of our Dragonfly and Amber read-along, I think we have to recommend Dragonfly and Amber.
I mean, it seems appropriate. Plenty of time to catch up if you're listening to the audiobook and you have a
Absolutely.
Long drive ahead of you.
Oh, especially, well, we're near the end of summer and people have already started school, so maybe not any long family road trips, but, you know, on your commute, That's, I know I talk about this all the time, but that's when I mostly listen to audiobooks. So basically, the sky is really the limit. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/outlanderpod. Again, that's audibletrial.com/outlanderpod for your free audiobook.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing with our Dragonfly and Amber read-along, reading chapter 26, and it's got a French word, so I'm not going to say it.
Fontainebleau.
Bleu.
Bleu.
So phonetically, Fontaine, B-L-O, B-L-O-W, Bleu.
B-L-O-P-N-O. No, not Bleu. Bleu. Yeah, B-L-O, if you're talking IPA.
Oh, I don't ever talk IPA.
So to begin this chapter discussion, we'll start with one of Connie's comments. Connie mentions that Fontainebleau was a royal chateau and that it wasn't the residence of Louise de Rohan. The only reason, she says, I can see that this was the name for the chapter is that Louise must have lived within the vicinity of the royal chateau. So the chapter basically opens at L'Hôpital. Just very, very, very briefly.
And like barely.
Like barely, but it that's opens, where it opens.
It opens with somebody stealing her from
exactly
L'Hôpital.
Claire sleeps for a few days and she doesn't know if it's to escape life or if it's out of the need for her body to recover. As she's waking up, people are lifting her from the bed bodily. She does have a moment where she thinks it's Jamie at first. Quote, I felt afloat in joy. But it was not Jamie. Alas, it was Hugo, Louise's footman. Louise is taking her to Fontainebleau. It's interesting the imagery of these three women. Claire, quote, blinking against the light like a newborn lamb. Louise's face, quote, round, pink, and anxious. And Mother Hildegard, quote, tall and stern as the angel at the gates of Eden. Mother Hildegard says that it'll be good for her, too, to go out and basically leave L'Hôpital. Connie writes, and besides, don't they need to free up Claire's bed for another patient according to the HMO? I mean, they do. I don't think Mother Hildegard was trying to rush her out, but now once it became clear that she was going to be all right, and she just, it was now more of a mental thing than a physical thing of her mourning and recovery, she was taking a bed.
She was taking a bed up, but I think that the larger issue at hand isn't so much of her taking the bed up, though I think that's a very funny statement and true to a certain degree, but the period of healing can never move forward when you're still in the place where you were when all of the bad things happen. So I feel like it's better for Claire to get out of that space, because as long as she's in that same place where all of the horrible things happened, she's never going to be able to not have it be present and right in her face. So she kind of, not that she needs to forget, they never forget. I know a lot of mothers who've lost children who years and years and years later, it never changes. It never really gets easier. It just becomes normal, their new normal. But if they stayed in the room where all of those horrible things happened to them, they would never be able to leave that moment, that day. So I think it's definitely a positive step for Claire to get out.
Then they're in the carriage. And on this carriage ride, the first time I listened to it most recently, and then when I read it, this didn't click for me. But when I went to take notes, I had a thought. I thought, this is really, I know there are more than three carriage rides, you know, behind the scenes and stuff that we're not hearing about. But this is the third major carriage ride that we've heard of for Claire while she's, well, this time not pregnant. And I thought it was interesting that a lot of the conversations, a lot of things happen in carriage rides. Remember the first one that I remember was when she was pregnant and they were on their way to the Royal Stud, she and Jamie and Fergus. And it was really wonky and she was having like some pains in her lower back. Probably just her muscles were tight. But they talked about, I think at that point, they had the conversation of, he was saying, look, if something happens, I want you to have a place to go. The blanket's the fan. I want you to have a place to go.
As long as the blanket hitting the fan was not his sword piercing.
Well, maybe.
Blackjacks, yeah. Whatnot.
He was talking about Claude.
He may have been, but.
Oh, no, he was talking about if things went down, if they couldn't stop it, and it had to go forward. And then the second carriage ride I remember, of course, was, I guess there were two, when she was on her way to the Bois. So obviously, she got to the Bois, stuff went down at the Bois. So it didn't really happen in the carriage, but she was taken, we believe, by carriage back to, or to the L'Hôpital. So that's not necessarily a carriage ride, but that carriage, she's a lot of awful stuff. In the carriage, she was having pains, I think, on the way to the Bois. And now, leaving L'Hôpital, again being in a carriage, no longer pregnant, but it was just interesting how these jarring carriage rides seem to be major things are happening to her during carriage rides.
So you're saying she should steer clear of carriages?
I don't think you can.
I mean, she could have just gotten on a horse.
Oh, yeah, like that would have been a lot better.
It might have been.
So on this carriage ride, again, the going is rough. There are potholes and ruts. Louise is chatty. And I thought, does it remind you of anybody else? Diana writes, soon realized that she required no answers and, in fact, talked more easily without them. Does that remind you of anybody in the room?
Am I allowed to say?
It's my cat, I know.
It's not your cat. Your cat is very quiet.
Depending.
I am speaking of you.
Yeah, I thought you might. So the vividness of the world outside of L'Hôpital is overwhelming for her. Quote, after days in the cool gray stone vault of L'Hôpital, I felt like a freshly unwrapped mummy and shrank from the assault of so much brightness and color. Connie writes, Claire's allowing herself to stay inside the bubble or cocoon of shock and grief and not wanting anything to do with reality. They are still in the carriage and they're going through a forest.
I think you are single-handedly making this the longest carriage ride ever.
Another Bois. They're going by or going into a forested area, and so they're out in this brightness and color that Claire has mentioned, and here again comes some shadiness or darkness. Quote, trunks were dark and thick with low spreading canopies that shadowed the ground beneath with shifting light. Does it give a sinister or dangerous look or feel? Quote, the whole wood seemed to be moving slightly in the wind.
It was.
The trunks were moving. Claire gets Louise's attention, and Louise... Okay, this is really funny. Louise gets her coachman to stop. They see these trunks that were moving, when actually was some hanged people. Two men and one woman are hanging from the tree, from a tree. Louise shrieks, and then blames her coachman for stopping right there in the middle of... I just thought, oh my gosh, she actually got him to stop. So... that was interesting. They chat briefly about it, and Louise says that the hanged men and woman were likely Huguenot.
I just love the fact that Claire says Monsieur Ferez wouldn't have approved at all of the method of execution.
Of course not.
They should not have strangled to death. They should have had their neck snapped.
So
opened.
Well, oh, their neck snapped. Sorry, I'm thinking of the whole like traitor thing.
No.
So according to Wikipedia, Huguenot were French Protestants inspired by the writings of Jean Calvin in French, in the 1530s, who became known by that originally derisive designation by the end of the 16th century. The majority of Huguenots endorsed the Reformed tradition of Protestantism. Persecution of Protestants diminished in France after the death of Louis XIV and officially ended with the Edict of Versailles, commonly called the Edict of Tolerance, signed by Louis XVI in 1787. Connie writes, Louise dabs her nose delicately, examines the results, and then blows her nose like with a, quote, satisfying honk. LOL, that Diana. And that reminded me of, again, Diana keeping it real with a popping dog fart. Didn't it?
No.
It kind of did.
Not until just now.
Okay. So we find out that likely the men, just being a Protestant was not enough. Typically, it was usually, if they were male, preaching sedition. And a woman, likely she was a witch. And also their dark clothing marked them as Protestants, according to Louise. Connie writes, hangings and executions usually took place in a very public place, such as a crossroads. And she tells us to pay attention to this, so that the hanged would serve as a warning to others. They arrive at Fontainebleau. Louise still has her monkey, and there is a cuckoo clock. A cuckoo. Louise says, whatever you want to say about the Swiss, they are clever woodcarvers, no? Claire, quote, wanted to say no, but instead merely murmured something tactfully admiring. Am I forgetting something, or does Claire have something against the Swiss?
I thought that too. I was looking at that and I was like, what happened? What does she have so negatively to think about the Swiss?
I love the Swiss, but that's a me thing.
I mean, does she dislike that they never take sides? I mean,
well, you know, my first thought was, when I was reading closely, that's an interesting statement. Did I miss something? And the only thing I could think of, not that I have an answer, is that it goes back to her being in World War II. Because the Swiss were neutral. I almost said neutral. The Swiss were neutral. And so I don't know if she or the English had any feeling about that. I don't know.
Maybe she personally is a better woodcarver than the Swiss people.
All in her one finger.
All by herself.
Then there is mention of La Dame Blanche. Louise tells Claire that the servants are talking about La Dame Blanche. And she recommends that Claire, although she says it's not a big deal, I told them I would dump anyone who insisted on talking about it and spreading such gossip, it might help if you start to attend daily mass, or at least pray. And Claire's like, yeah, that's just so far from it gonna happen that, okay, I can do the prayers, but mass is a bit much. So they read the Lord's Prayer together, loudly. I thought that part was funny. So we get a little taste, a little look into Claire's headspace. She has a lot of difficulty sleeping. She says that her waking state was like an uneasy doze. She frequently lay awake at night, and the dim gray shape in the darkness was the personification of her depression. So we know here, not that we couldn't have gotten the feeling of it, but now she says flat out that she's in a depression. When she closed her eyes, she dreamed, and it was vivid color that assaulted her. So here's another comparison or another, some more imagery of this, of her wanting to be in gray, her wanting to be in that safety. Colors of L'Hôpital, the grayness of basically her depression, the darkness, was much more comforting than having to go back and into the brightness and vivid color of the world. And she used the word assault. Diana compares the vivid color, quote, assault, to the drab color of L'Hôpital, with the bright colors of the outside world during their carriage ride and the danger of the forest. It's interesting. Diana's comparison with light and drab colors being safe, remember the mummy in the tomb? And the bright, vivid colors.
Was there money in the tomb with the mummy?
Assaultive. I want that money. Bring back that money. So we have dark and gray and colorless being safe, and bright, vivid life.
Well, of course it's being safe. Being assaultive. Because as long as she's in that grayness, she doesn't have to feel anything and...
or face anything.
Yeah. And once she's out in the world and surrounded by the brightness and life in general, she's, you know, having to face, you know, the truth of what happened and the truth of what's going to happen because of it.
Outside the chateau, there is still no word of Jamie. She wonders about him, but doesn't ask about him. So she knows that there's this, her husband is out there somewhere, she hasn't heard of him. She thinks enough to think, oh, he's not here. I wonder where he is. You know, she has the presence of mind to wonder about him, but not take it to the next level and actually ask anyone about him. And she sees that Fergus is becoming depressed as well.
She's still mad.
Of course she is.
She's super mad at him, and she doesn't understand. I mean, we all know where he is, but she doesn't realize where he is at this point. So all that she knows is that this horrible thing happened, and he could not even be bothered to come and be by her side as it happened. That's the only reality she lives in right now. So until she has a little better of an understanding as to everything that went down following the bois, whatever it's called, things will start to make more sense for her. And she, you know, can start I mean, it's going to have to be start the whole forgiveness thing. That has to happen at some point. But
right now, she thinks he's
hiding.
No, she thinks he's on his way on the ship.
Well, all she knows, as far as I'm concerned, is that he's not there, and that's where he should be.
Yeah, but she's not concerned he's not there. I mean, she hasn't said it. She hasn't looked for him or asked about him, but she's... If everything is going according to plan, which we don't know yet, he would be on his way via ship to... He would have hopefully gotten word from... From Myrta. And then he was supposed to go to... Is it Ofieto? I'm going to get that wrong. He was supposed to be on his way to meet him, to be on board with him so they could be there when the ship was... When Myrta got pox.
Mm.
And then they could take and sell the merchandise. The wine. Connie writes, it's the first time that she's shown concern, really, for anyone other than herself or her own loss. This is a step toward recovery. So that's true. So being out in the vibrant, assaultive color of life is a step toward recovery. Diana writes that Fergus is sitting, quote, disconsolately beneath a hawthorn bush in the garden, looking toward Paris.
You didn't look up hawthorn bush?
I did. Of course I did. Now, before I get to the hawthorn, Connie writes, this reminds me of Claire sitting on the front steps of Lallybroch, on the steps of the palace, waiting for Jamie. And it was sweet. I can totally see that. But of course, my brain went to Hawthorne. So quickly, I didn't write out a huge description or a huge, I know, thank you. You're welcome.
You strained yourself? That's a
first. Big time. So from whatsyoursign.com, and if anyone knows of a site or a repository that has lists of symbolism, whether it's from literature, religion, art, anything. I'm not saying these sources don't have correct information, but when you're citing something to hopefully pass on as information, you don't want to necessarily use, and this is not a horoscope site, but you don't want to use a horoscope site. You want to use something that's from a .edu. You want to use something that's may truly come from someone's religious belief, but you want something that's from a write-up, something that's been true research that's been done or collected in an article or something. So if anyone has any ideas of a great resource, if we get as many books as we hope to get, there's maybe more tree and stuff, some symbolism going on over the next few years. So that would be a great resource to have if you guys have any ideas for now. And I looked at a few. I chose to go with...
For now, you went to what sounds like a dating site.
I know, huh?
What's your sign.com?
it was there. The Celtic meaning of the hawthorn tree deals with balance and duality. The hawthorn is full of contradictions, and we will include that link. Now, I would submit that Jamie is full of contradictions. So just like Jamie, and I don't think it was a hawthorn, but in Outlander, when Jamie was sitting under that one tree, and I read about what the tree symbolized... I think at one time it was an oak, at one time it was something else. But I would say that Jamie is also full of contradictions, right? So he is this devout Catholic, but also has superstitions, or at least he's respectful of folk custom and superstitions that his own people have. He loves Claire beyond words, yet will do things that she believes are not keeping to his word. Claire suggests Fergus go out to the stables to help. I'm guessing some stable lad. And she sees that Fergus is scratching his buttocks. He refuses to bathe, and she likens him to a fury. And a fury, in Greek mythology, is a female spirit of justice and vengeance. So the scratching of his buttocks did not make him a fury, but it was him trying to get away from her, this mad little, red devil just running away. She was trying to get him to go into the bath, and it was just, he was just a little spitfire. As I said, she runs after him, and... She's far enough behind him to not actually see exactly where he is, but she thinks she has an idea that he's in this shed, and she sees like a flash of white coming from coming from the shed, so she thinks he's in there. So she goes to the shed, but it's not Fergus. It's the wild man from Borneo. Now, Connie looked this up a little bit, and she shares that the wild men of Borneo was a freak show attraction presented by P.T. Barnum. And maybe non-US Americans will know this, but I will say it for everyone. So P.T. Barnum, at least to myself and probably modern day Americans, is best known as part of the Barnum and Bailey traveling circus, right? Mm. So the wild men of Borneo were Wino and Plutonor, actually Hiram W. and Barney Davis, were a pair of exceptionally strong dwarf brothers who were most famously associated with P.T. Barnum and his freak show exhibitions. Additionally, there was a 1941 movie, a romance comedy, titled The Wild Man of Borneo, that Claire could have seen. The movie starred two of the stars of The Wizard of Oz, too. Do you know which ones? And I actually don't. And I didn't have time to look it up, so that will be interesting to look into.
I'm imagining maybe like...
Tin Man?
No. I mean, if we're talking... I'm imagining she's talking more dwarves, and there's lots of those.
Oh, I forgot.
Lots of small people. Sorry. In The Wizard of Oz.
Yes, there were.
So it makes me think that maybe it's like some specific dwarf. Like mayor of Munchkin Land or the Lollipop Guild dude. Or,
oh, that is true. So when she approaches the shed, she notes that the doorway was darkened, and inside the shade was relative dark. There is a man inside, again, who looks like the wild man of Borneo. So a very unkempt, kind of long beard, dirty. And he holds up a wooden crucifix against her. And her first reaction is to say, "Oh, bother, not another one." And, oh, bother, what does that remind you of?
Winnie the Pooh.
Exactly. So that made me laugh, too. So she starts to recite the Lord's Prayer in Latin, trying to prove that she wasn't a witch. And it turns out he didn't think she was a witch. Claire finds his French graceful and educated, though oddly accented. And the man was afraid that she would think he was a witch. He turns out to be the Reverend Walter Laurent of Geneva. He's a Huguenot, a French Protestant. She's English, and he relaxes. But then she says, I'm Catholic, but I'm not at all vicious about it. And once, because when he hears that she's English, of course, that puts him at ease a little bit, because of course English are Protestants, correct? For the most part. So then she's like, no, I'm actually Catholic, but it's all good. I'm not vicious about my Catholicism. She won't turn him in. She mentions that she was even almost once burned at the stake. So Reverend Laurent says he's heard of an English woman called La Dame Blanche, an associate of Raymond the Heretic. Claire raises her hand. Says, basically, oui, c'est moi. Ellen writes, when all of the awkward information is let loose and Reverend Laurent, knowing that Claire is a safe person to speak to, all of this wonderful backstory for Raymond comes out. How did he know of and why did La Dame Blanche come into the conversation? Other than her being an associate of Raymond, how did he know? I can't answer that question. Do you have any ideas on that?
You'll have to excuse me. I'm currently figuring out who was in The Wild Man of Borneo.
Of the dudes?
Yeah, right now I've got the actual wizard.
He was in it?
Yes.
Oh.
Frank Morgan, who played the Wizard of Oz. He was in it, but he's the only... I knew his face right away, but I'm looking through the rest of these people in the cast, and I'm having a hard time finding the second one. So I've got one of them, Connie. I'm expecting you to tell me the other.
Come on, Connie, do us a solid. Let us know who the other person was.
I'm more wondering how long this dude's been hanging out.
Long enough to grow a foot-long beard.
Right, but hanging out specifically there. Because they've only been in France for a specific period of time, which would mean for him to have known...
Who's they? The Huguenots?
No. They, Jamie and Claire.
Ah.
They've only been in France for a specific period of time, which means she's only known Master Raymond for a specific period of time.
Well, they left... Okay, let's back up a tiny bit. We don't know exactly when. We know they got to the Abbey on Christmas Eve. She was already pregnant when they got to the Abbey. Not far along, but we don't know exactly. So let's just say it was about a month. Whatever. If they leave the Abbey and get to Paris and set up shop and everything, and she loses the baby at between 6 and 7 months, let's say a solid 5. It may be longer, it may be shorter, but a solid 5. So approximately 5 months, give or take, even if she met Raymond right away, that's the longest it could have been, would be 5 months. Right? About that?
Right.
So the La Dame Blanche bit, that only came to her awareness when they were attacked in the alley. But that happened after Jamie was already spreading rumors about her. He says to her, oh, you know, well, I may have been saying things, da da da. And so we don't know how soon Jamie started saying that. So the alley attack is not probably the defining moment. It's whenever Jamie, it's two things, right? It's her making the acquaintance with Raymond, as well as Jamie spreading those words, spreading the rumors, or spreading the name of La Dame Blanche as her, as his wife. So whenever that happened, I would say most four and a half months, maybe. Is four and a half months long? I mean, I guess it's long enough to get a rep.
Are you saying four and a half months, or like four and a half months, like four times four and a half?
Because you could be pregnant for 16 months. Yeah.
Four and a half?
Oh, like a height?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. No. If any other listeners or Outlander fans have any idea about kind of a guesstimate, that would be kind of cool to hear. That's the best I got.
Well, if he's been hiding, I don't know how long he's been hiding, this dude.
Okay, he was probably already bearded. The beard probably got longer.
I'm not even talking about that. My point is the information he's receiving, mm-hmm. did he receive it from Master Raymond mm-hmm. when they were being buddy-buddies and wherever they were? Or is he receiving it all secondhand from the two ladies who were bringing him food that know about him there? Is it something you heard on the road? I'm just wondering.
I don't think he's seen Master Raymond since he's been in France.
In France?
Because he knew him in Geneva.
Geneva. So is this all just stuff he's hearing probably from the people bringing him food then, or?
Maybe. Well, see, that's the thing is we don't know exactly who told him, do we?
No.
So yeah, it's how, Ellen again writes, how did he know of and why did La Dame Blanche come into the conversation? Well, the La Dame Blanche came into the conversation because he knew it was this English woman and they're quite rare, I'm guessing, around those parts, in out and about.
They're really common in England.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're not in England.
Or Kansas. But that's funny now that I'm saying that, because we were just talking about The Wizard of Oz. It's like the difference in The Wizard of Oz, you have the old stuff that happens, it's all in the black and white. And then when she goes through the tornado and wakes up in the Land of Oz and it's all bright and vibrant colors, it's like the difference between where she's from and where she is now. So,
mm-hmm. And safety and danger.
Yes.
So I wonder if Diana, by mentioning the Wild Man of Borneo, thought about the Wizard of Oz connection to black and white or gray and vibrant assault of color.
I don't know.
Hey, Connie, you're making our head spin, and Summer, you're giving me a headache.
You're welcome.
So he's also an acquaintance, Laurent, is an acquaintance of Raymond's, who was a reputable physician and herbalist, he says, though now he was involved in darker pursuits. He tells Claire about Du Carrefour. He was the organizer of a ring of unspeakable vice and depravity, occult practices, and he was tried and sentenced and burned at the stake. Connie writes, Du Carrefour is apparently a fictional character, not historic. The French word carrefour equals crossroads in English. Do you remember what Connie said earlier about listening, about keeping that crossroads in mind? She pointed out that hangings typically happened at a crossroads, and she asked us to keep an eye out. So that's interesting. So carrefour in French means crossroads in English. Master Raymond speaks several tongues without noticeable accent. No one knows where he comes from, and he's very mysterious, but he's a good man. He did some business with Carrefour, supplied him with stuff, with items for his business, most likely. And Laurent further describes one horrid-looking fish, quote, from the depths of the sea that he had gotten once. And Ellen suggests it may have been an anglerfish.
I thought so too, but the picture that Ellen provided is not what I think of when I think of anglerfish.
Okay, well, let me see the other one. And Connie thought it... She also mentioned anglerfish, but her first suggestion was a dragonfish. And they are both, I don't even want, is it going to scare me like these, Summer? I can't.
Look.
I can't. Look. Oh my God.
That is an anglerfish.
Oh my God.
Look again.
Oh my God. Put it away. I got on Twitter last night and said, to Ellen and Connie. The images you shared of those fish were horrific or terrifying. And then they both tweeted back and said, I know, aren't they awful? And the one that Summer just showed me was more along the lines of a dragonfish, but it was...
That's an anglerfish.
Oh, Summer, stop it. I don't want to see it again. No, more along the lines of the dragonfish, or at least the color of the photo. But, oh my gosh. If what you held up to my face 25 times...
Not enough.
...was an actual anglerfish...
It is an anglerfish.
Maybe this is just a dead
Do you know
one.
Why it's called an anglerfish?
Because
an angler is like a fisherman, yeah. And they have that one long light thing that dangles out in front of their mouths.
I'm
so
happy.
The fish are attracted to it, and then they eat them. Now, if you've seen the movie Finding Nemo, they have an anglerfish in that movie.
Do you look a lot better than that?
That looks just like that. I'm going to find you the picture. Give me one second.
I might be able to handle the cartoon
Nemo.
Version.
It's from Finding Nemo. I don't know about that.
So Connie writes, it's kind of interesting, Connie... Harkening back to, I think, episode 6 of the Outlander Stars series, Connie writes, They dwell in darkness, mesdames, and darkness is where they belong. That's me, Connie. That's me, Connie says, being clever. Well, that was actually quite clever. So Connie's bringing back a line from episode 6, the Garrison Commander, to, these fish dwell in darkness, and they belong there. I will be very happy... For the rest of my life, if I don't ever have to see that picture again, because I've seen those like in biology textbooks and they scare the crap out of me. That's just something I don't want for my dreams.
You want me to put the picture away?
No. Yes.
No? You said no first.
No, I thought you were going to say put it up again.
No.
As Claire's about to go, Laurent tells her he is sorry for her loss and she thanks him, quote, staring at the stripes of sunlight on the floor. So we have now a mention of light in the darkness. She tells him that she doesn't know where Jamie is and doesn't care and does not want to see him again. Connie writes, Do we believe Claire? Nah, I don't. Claire realizes she's verbalized her actual feelings. She tells him that he broke a great trust between them. She sits with Laurent, his hand on hers, for quite a while. Ellen writes, When he told Claire he felt for her loss, wow, that was powerful. That Claire was able to voice her feelings and that he just held her hand, ministering to her in her time of need.
A lot of the friends that I've known who have lost children and have suffered a great loss, whatever that loss may be, a lot of times people make the mistake of trying to make them move past it and not talk about it and not be in that moment and experience the feelings. And every last one of them, to me, has said over time that the best thing that their friends could do for them would be to let them talk about
it. Just be there.
Just be there. They don't need to say anything. Sometimes just being there with them and letting them feel is more helpful than trying to make jokes and try to make them think of other things and distract them from what they're going through. So it was very helpful what he did, I thought.
Laurent urges Claire to leave and notes that she would be missed. And that's true. And also, her being gone as someone came out and looked for him and they found... Sorry, looking for her and they found him. Obviously, that's dangerous for him. So he's like, you're going to be missed, so it's time for you probably to go. And she wants to give him the purse that she has on her with some money in it. And he accepts, he says, if she will allow him to pray for her.
Which she thought was a bargain. That was chapter 26... Join us next week when we will be discussing chapter 27, entitled An Audience with His Majesty. Hey, look, those were all words I know how to pronounce.
That is true. Thank you, everyone who submitted comments. We love to hear from you. And thank everyone for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/outlanderpod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.